I find that when people get turned on to macros, it can actually help people move away from this clean eating mindset. You know, there's so many diets out there, super overly restrictive, cut out all the processed foods, never have any added sugar, all of that stuff. And ultimately, that restriction is why those diets fail, because people don't get to include the foods they love. And so I find that macros can be a great way for people to learn, oh, okay, I don't have to cut this out, but I do actually have to watch the portion that I eat of it. That's really awesome. I think that the problem is kind of the longer people stay in that mindset, then they kind of move to the other extreme, because we have a tendency to really enjoy these processed foods. And because the whole goal of the diet is to stay fixated on these macro targets, that we now can start overly indexing on this sort of if it fits your macros concept. And perhaps ironically is what then makes the macros diet less sustainable.
Hello and welcome to the Consistency Project podcast. My name is Patrick Cummings. As always, I'm here with EC Sinkowski. Every week here on the show, we aim to simplify the science of nutrition, health and fitness, cutting through the noise to focus on the principles and practices that will help you perform better, feel better, and of course, live better. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Hello, EC.
Hey, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well, and I'm well hydrated. That's how I'm doing today. This week, we are going to dive into macros. We're going to have a conversation around some of the common misconceptions with macros, and we're going to explore a couple macro myths, including some of the implications and origins, provide insight into some more sustainable, balanced approach to macros. So I'm excited about this. I admit, I think a lot of people have tried macros. I have never tried macros. So let's do, for those folks like me who have never dipped their toes into macros, let's do a little bit of background. What are macros? Why does it matter? Why are we going to talk about some of the misconceptions?
I might need a new host. I didn't know that, Patrick. Jeez.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm very boring. I was like real hard into zone diet like 15 years ago. And then after that, I sort of was like, okay, I got it.
Yeah, exactly. So many of our listeners and my clients do have a good amount of experience weighing and measuring their food, typically with macros, maybe with zone, as you did. And I think everyone knows, but just to make sure that we're clear, macros, short for macronutrients, it's your weighing and measuring all of your food to make sure that you hit these protein, carbohydrate, and fat gram targets each day. And I think people often believe that macros is the best approach in nutrition because of that accuracy and the total quantity that they're eating. And certainly it can and does work for a lot of people. I'm not trying to say that it doesn't. But I do work with a good amount of people who had success with macros for some period of time and it's not working anymore. And what I hear from them is that they're often looking for tweaks, so to speak, on their macro numbers. And I find that they don't really need tweaks. They need kind of a paradigm shift in how they're approaching nutrition. And so I don't teach people to count macros. I often say that because that's kind of what people know and can associate, but I really do teach people my three pillars method. And the reason that I teach people my three pillars method and not macros is because I think it better addresses the 10 principles, which really are what underlie my nutrition message. I mean, everyone knows me as, you know, 800 gram challenge, but it's really the principles that I'm after for people. And we've talked about them before. I think the most recent podcast with Miranda, we went over them a bit. And so I don't want to go through them all individually and verbatim here. But I think the ones that are really relevant for today's discussion, just paraphrasing here, are number one, that calories control your weight. Number two, macros control your body composition. Number four, the quality determines your health. The quality of your food determines your health. Number five, it's never one thing. Number seven, sustainability is the most important factor for diet selection. And number 10, there are diminishing returns on attaining perfection. And ultimately, you know, macros really just focuses on principle two. It's accounting for your macros. But I think it fails to account or address those other ones, especially the ones that I listed, which is how and why people can run into a dead end with kind of the macros tracking approach. And so, yeah, this is to kind of go over some of the common faults I see with the more experienced macro counters and to try to tie those faults back to where they're missing some of these fundamental principles.
Love it. Okay, so we're going to get into five macro myths. I'll give us all five first, and then we'll just sort of chip away at the list. Number one, you need to hit triple zeros. Number two, you can eat whatever you want as long as it fits your macros. Number three, your macronutrient ratio is keeping you from your body composition goals. Number four, you need to hit 1 gram per pound of protein. And number five, you should hit your macro numbers even if you aren't hungry. So first myth first, you need to hit triple zeros for noobs such as myself. What the heck does that even mean?
Yeah, so hitting triple zeros refers to hitting your macro targets perfectly for the day. So let's just say that you were targeting like 150 grams of protein, 250 grams of carbs, and 100 grams of fat. You know, in most logging apps, people set it up to display how much they have remaining after they're logging each food. So you hit triple zeros at the end of the day if your display shows you have 0 grams of protein left, 0 grams of carbs, 0 grams of fat left. And so in theory, you ate, you know, perfectly. They exactly ate their 150 grams of protein, et cetera. Okay. So this is kind of a feigned level of precision, in my opinion, that leads to disordered eating more than any real nutrition success. And I know personally, like I did all these faults that we talk about on the podcast. I'm not just saying that everyone else is doing it wrong. Like, I've done this stuff. So I know when I was doing macros, there's definitely more than one night that I ate some really convoluted dinner. I can distinctly remember a night where I did collagen powder and tea, and then like a whole sliced cucumber. Cause I had something like 15, 20 grams of protein and, 5 grams of carbs left to go or something like that. There's other times that I would like shave a piece of butter off for a few grams of fat, to zero out my fat. And it's just so, ugh, it's just so irrelevant. It's so in the weeds. Now I do think it's important to point out, it is true that we need pretty good consistency at targets to drive weight loss. I'm not denying that. It is also true that we are going to have to restrict our intake to lose weight such that some meals aren't going to be as large or grandiose as we would like. But the nuances with this kind of triple zero mindset is twofold that I want to point out. First is you didn't actually eat exactly 150 grams of protein, 250 grams of carbs, and 100 grams of fat that day. That's what you've recorded in the app that you ate. That's not actually what you ate. That's what it was recorded that you ate. And there's a difference there because of there's rounding on food labels. There's just an overall margin of error allowed on food labels up to 20%, meaning that the label could say the food has 100 calories per serving, but it actually has 120 calories. And there's also this issue that some food is inevitably left on the pan or on the spoon and all of this stuff that we have all of these little errors all over the place that even if you do weigh and measure and log everything perfectly and don't forget anything, what you record is not a perfect reflection of what you truly consumed. And so if you're, at the end of the day eating the half tablespoon of olive oil to zero out the numbers, it's just a little out of touch of what's important. And I think this mindset, also extends into this behavior that I see where people are very hesitant with estimating foods or portions that they're eating, because it breeds this sort of mindset of, okay, well, my log needs to be perfect. And if it isn't perfect, there is no value and I'm not making progress, and I'll see people, they get worried about their family dinners. And so it's like, no, I'm just going to eat my deli turkey and apples. I'm not going to worry about the recipe because I need my log to be right. And you have to kind of pause and think, well, this isn't going to actually work. I mean, this is going to work for the period of time that we're doing macros, but this isn't actually going to work for real length of time. And so it's sort of this spillover effect of this idea of how precise the numbers are and then what they're doing to the log to make it perfect. And the truth is we don't need that level of perfection to make progress. Yes, we need consistency in the direction of better compared to where we are today to make progress. But it's that perfectionist mindset that really makes the whole thing unsustainable. And it reminds me, of course, of Principle 10. There are diminishing returns on attaining perfection, that there's this idea of this perfect log that's going to lead you to your results without realizing that the underlying data will never be perfect and without understanding when and how to make the call on when good enough is good enough.
I don't know why I'm surprised by that 20%. Margin of error on food levels. I guess I just never thought about it. Like, you just have this assumption that it's like, okay, well, it's printed there. It must be perfect. But that's such a good point.
Well, I like to give the example of a loaf of bread in a bag. Like, think about the end piece. And just think about how like food is made and mechanized.
Everybody skips it.
It is a good piece. But think about how like food is mechanized and made, like it's never going to be perfect in all. So they have to allow for margin of error. But ultimately, that means that the data isn't perfect. And yet we can still make progress.
Okay. Second macro myth. You can eat whatever you want as long as it fits your macros.
Yeah. So this is the if it fits your macros, the IIFYM framework we touched on a little bit when we were reviewing Alan Aragon's book. But basically, the IIFYM, you know, mentality has become that, okay, it doesn't matter what the quality of the food is. I'm just going to hit my protein, carb, and fat targets for the day. And then it's a, quote, good day. And what's interesting is I find that when people kind of get turned on to macros, it can actually help people move away from this clean eating mindset. You know, there's so many diets out there, paleo, we did all this stuff, super overly restrictive, cut out all the processed foods, never have any added sugar, all of that stuff. And ultimately that restriction is why those diets fail, because people don't get to include the foods they love, you know, and I can tell you that why so many diets fail is people cut out all the foods that they actually want to be eating. And so I find that macros can be a great way for people to learn, oh, okay, I don't have to cut this out, but I do actually have to watch the portion that I eat of it. That's really awesome. I think that the problem is kind of the longer people stay in that mindset, then they kind of move to the other extreme, because we have a tendency to really enjoy these processed foods. And because the whole goal of the diet is to stay fixated on these macro targets, that we now can start overly indexing on this sort of if it fits your macros concept. And perhaps ironically is what then makes the macros diet less sustainable. Because we talked about recently what makes food satisfying, right? In a recent podcast. And what does it come down to? Generally, water content, fiber, and protein. And so I find that I've got clients who are hitting their macros numbers, but their diets just aren't that satisfying. And I have a feeling it's because they're just focusing on what are the foods to make this Tetris game work of protein, carb, and fat. You know, there's the phrase of what gets measured gets managed. And it's very true with macros clients. They're so focused on principle two, so focused on those three numbers, that principle four, the idea of quality foods, yes, they're aware of it. Yes, it's important, but it's not what's getting measured. And therefore, it doesn't get managed. And so of course, the quality foods, you get all the vitamins, the minerals, the fiber that will improve your health in the long term. But in the short term, I find that clients will see a boost in fitness and will have better day-to-day energy or recovery levels. And they also just have less of a restriction mindset around food because they are more satisfied. So I think we can do a better job between kind of the clean eating, paleo, overly restrictive approach to the macros of, okay, well, let me just focus on protein, carb, and fat and everything else. Oh, well.
The third myth, your macronutrient ratio is keeping you from your body composition goals. I think that's maybe the tweaks you were talking about at the start.
Yeah. This is definitely some of the tweaks. Now, it is true that my second principle basically says your macros control your body composition. So I, of course, agree with this on some level, but I do have a good amount of clients who think they just need a new combination of ratios to reach their body composition goals. When in reality is we've kind of overlooked principle one in those cases, because principle one is total calories, control your weight. So if you're not leaning out, it's not because of your macronutrient distribution. It's not because you need a different protein multiplier, you need more carbs to fat, or you need a 40-30-30 perfect split or something like that. It's because your calories are too high. And so you can keep playing with this distribution. I don't know how many times people have told me that they've been on months with XYZ coach and it was like tweaking the carb and fat ratio and they're not losing weight. You can keep playing with that distribution. That's not the problem. I also think that people, and I know we've touched on this before, believe that there's some perfect, shall we say, golden macronutrient ratio for you, their goals, for their needs. And there's a little bit more fluidity to that. It's better to think that there are several golden ratios that will work for you, or maybe a range of golden ratios, because we have to remember principle five, it's never one thing. So once your calories are correct, and then when we're within this good enough range for your macronutrients, the results are going to come from being consistently near those numbers and then getting enough quality in those numbers. And then, of course, paying attention to all those other gosh darn lifestyle factors like sleep and exercise and decreasing life stress. And all of that is going to add up and really get you towards your goals, more so than keep fixating on this kind of distribution of macronutrients. And I guess I should mention, just for completeness, that if someone is not leaning out, there is also the potential that their macro targets are too aggressive. So this would be the case where their calories are ultimately really low and they can actually stick to them Monday to Friday. So in theory that they would be leaning out, but they're so aggressive that they're so hungry, they end up going off the rails on the weekend. So they might be in a deficit for 5 days, then they're in a surplus for 2 days, and the net change is zero by the time we get back to the top of the new week. So I guess in either case, what I'm trying to say here is the macronutrient distribution is relatively meaningless when the calories to base that distribution of are not correct. And people could be targeting too high of a caloric intake or even too low once we especially look at sustainability, aka principle 7.
Got it. All right, moving on. The fourth myth, you need to hit 1 gram per pound of protein. This is definitely something we've talked about plenty of times here.
Yes, yes. And so I don't want to spend too much time going through the rationale of the 0.7 grams per pound. I want to touch on hopefully a couple new nuances related to this. The first is kind of, I guess, more of a exacting or pedantic point. It's actually come up a few times recently, and so I think it might be confusing more than a few people. So the literature on, you know, what level of protein produces XYZ effect, the literature reports protein intake as grams per kilogram. That's just kind of standard nomenclature. And then I convert it to grams per pound because of our US-centric audience. But I know that there's been some cases where people think others' recommendations are quite high. Like, why does so-and-so recommend 1.2? What they're not realizing is that recommendation is actually in grams per kilogram. And so you would have to divide that by 2.2 to get the grams per pound. So I recommend, again, 0.7 grams per pound. And I'm going to tell you that's relatively high compared to what exists in the research, even research done on athletes, and that's the equivalent of 1.6 grams per kilogram. So just kind of a little heads up, I actually had this recently with the CrossFit Health Conference of people misunderstanding some protein intake recommendations. And it's really not, don't just look at that numerical value, but of course the units, to make sure that you really understand how much protein that the person is recommending. Okay, that being said, that little nuance being said, there are experts or influencers who do insist people need this 1 gram per pound or the 2.2 grams per kilogram. And I think people sort of make the assumption, it's kind of like the more is always better assumption. It's like, okay, well, I want lean mass, and so it's okay to overshoot protein because it'll just help build more muscle if I'm going to build more muscle. I think that's sort of the mentality. It's like, okay, well, EC might say 0.7, but so-and-so says 1 gram, and I want lean mass, so more is better. Let's do it. Well, there is only so much protein that you need, of course, based on how much muscle you have, as well as how much volume and intensity you're doing, such that the extra protein that you eat above and beyond that will be used for energy, just like carbs and fat in your diet. So once you're eating excess protein and above and beyond the needs to create the lean mass, you'd be better off spending those calories towards the foods you love instead of trying to fixate on more protein if you want this gosh darn diet to be sustainable. So let's just sort of say the difference between targeting a 0.7 and a 1 gram per pound multiplier is, let's just say that's 30 grams of protein. If you were eating that 30 grams of protein as pure protein, you would have to take in 120 calories. But we don't eat pure protein. We eat food that has mixtures of nutrients. And so when you have to go get that extra 30 grams of protein, you're probably going to end up eating closer to 240 calories. So that 240 calories above and beyond what you might need for your musculature could be spent not on, let's say, steak, but it could be spent on a glass of wine and dark chocolate. And so giving people more freedom in their diet so that they're not overeating protein is how we make the diet more sustainable. We want to figure out where we can get more wine, dark chocolate, cookies, pick your treat of choice into the diet. We don't want to overshoot protein just because maybe. We want to figure out the right amount of protein and then free up as many calories that we can such that we actually enjoy our diet.
Super interesting. Okay. Fifth and final, you should hit your macro numbers every day, even if you aren't hungry.
Yeah.
I imagine this is related to the first one too, hitting triple zeros.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about that. It's just this level of rigidity that is not real. You know, it's a level of like trying to hit these magic numbers, which just aren't necessary. Your body's metabolism is not static every day. You don't burn the same amount of calories day in and day out. It goes up and down. Like How was your volume today? Did you do a longer or shorter workout? How hard did you go? Hormones can influence this. Even how much you ate any single day will also influence how much you burn that day, which we've talked about before. Now, again, I agree with some of this in the sense of for simplicity and for accounting purposes, it makes sense to target the same numbers every day, especially if you have sort of a general routine of exercise and stuff. But learning to pay attention to your true hunger, as well as, you know, being able to discern that hunger from, let's say, just mindless eating or boring, you know, boredom eating or emotional eating, as we've talked about, is really useful. And some days you just aren't hungry. And not eating to your macro targets is good and fine, particularly if you want to lose weight. There is no need to eat more just because, again, you need this perfect log and on paper that's not even perfect, right? And it can go the other way, too, that some days you're going to be much more hungry. Just, I don't know, you did 10,000 steps because of whatever. You did every errand under the sun or something like that. And you're going to go over your macros a little bit. And a lot of times that will spin people out a little bit with that perfectionist mindset. It's like, oh my gosh, the diet's done. I went over. And it's like, no. Both our intake and our expenditure is a little fluid. And of course, it's the consistency project. Consistency helps. We can't just choose random numbers to hit every day. That's not how we're going to get after our goal. But the the nuance here is this fixation on perfection is really what trips people up. I spend a good amount of time like coaching people, like, do not worry about that. Continue. You know what I mean? Because the reality is the system itself, your metabolism, as well as the tools that we have for weighing and measuring, are not perfectly consistent. So it's understanding what's this acceptable ebb and flow in the targets, and also understanding, okay, there is some ebb and flow there, and that's natural and good. And then there's also some ebb and flow in which my plan isn't working. And I find that that macros doesn't help people kind of teach that difference, right? It's so just fixated on like, here are the three numbers, hit them. And yes, it can work, but I don't find that it ultimately leads to a very sustainable plan. And so when we have more flexibility and autonomy, as Alan said in his book, that's when we really get after sustainability for the individual and what I try to add with my three pillars method versus something like macros.
Mm-hmm. That last bit, I was going to ask you just to put a kind of a pin in it, is one of the arguments that you're making here and like in it broadly, that the three pillars method is the road to what people are looking for instead of macros. In other words, like a lot of people go towards macros, and for these five reasons and probably five more, the three pillars method might be the smarter, better, to your point, more sustainable approach. And if so, I mean, obviously it's sort of a silly question for me to ask because of this podcast, but like, where can we learn more? Where would you point people to learn more about the three pillars method and maybe even a little bit more about the distinction between macros and the three pillars method?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course I'm biased. Of course, I think it's the better method than macros, or at least my best way that I've come up with for people to enact the principles at this point. I mean, maybe down the road, I'm going to have some sort of flash of light and realize that I was doing it all wrong. And, you know, there's another new great way to approach nutrition or something like that. But yeah, I mean, I think ultimately it helps people see how much flexibility they have in their diet. And I think that's what people really dislike about macros, how rigid it is. Now, there's some things we can't get away from. It turns out, you know, calories are a thing. And it turns out that protein helps lean mass. And it turns out that most people like to have some level of processed foods in their diet, probably more than we can. So there are some truths that we can't get away from. And I think the three pillars method helps people start to balance all of those different competing factors or different influences on the diet versus saying, okay, just hit protein, carb, and fat. And so that's really my goal with it. And, you know, of course, my masterclass is a place that you go through it with me and for the full step-by-step. But we've covered this in a bunch of episodes, you know, quote, the answer's out there. We've talked about it recently on the optimization podcast. We've done two different three pillars method episodes. One was when I kind of first had the idea before it was really formally named. One was also more recently with Rory McKernan. We also have an episode on figuring out the right amount to eat. And so all of those contain the methodology to better understand what it is. And of course, the three pillars are looking at quality, protein, and calories in the diet. And we'll link to all of those in the show notes so that people can take advantage of that content.
All Alrighty, see, thank you so much. Thank you everybody out there for listening. Thank you for your ratings and your reviews. This would be a great episode to share with a friend. Mm. So if you haven't ever done that, that does help the show continue to grow, lets us continue to do it. And also you can help your friends out. So thank you in advance. EC and I will be back next week for another episode of the Consistency Project Podcast.